seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. And our phone lines are open this morning. You can also text us your questions at 57500. The top of the hour feature this hour, we know people are thinking about planning, preparing for their gardening season, Ton. We've been talking a lot about seeds, and you have an interview with the Ogden Seed Exchange.
We do. So Anna Cash, who is a master gardener and on the board of the Ogden Seed Exchange, I talked to her for some time yesterday, and she is just into all things gardening and food preservation. So she's gone through USU's master garden or master food preservation courses. Mm-hmm. And has a business to where she teaches food preservation, but she's also really into gardening and just seems like she has her fingers in a lot of different related areas in the community. And so we talked about the Ogden Seed Exchange in this interview, but it's one of a seed exchange, which she'll define. If you are into gardening, into saving seeds, or even if you just want to get started, they're a wonderful experience with anywhere from mainstream gardeners to quirky gardeners. And so we can go ahead and play that interview with Anna Cash.
So a seed exchange is basically a way for growers and gardeners to get together and either sell their seeds that they've saved or swap with fellow gardeners. That's just the basic premise of it, but it's basically like before the growing season starts, you would have a seed swap and kind of get ready for the growing season.
Yeah, who knows what you're going to come away with?
Over 500 people gather and talk seeds, and we have seed saving class workshops. It's just so much fun, and the energy is just electric.
So if you're a new gardener, what would you tell them?
We welcome anybody, even if they don't have seeds. Just come out, learn how to do it, purchase some seeds. We will have seed vendors. We have local seed savers, including Wasatch Community Gardens, Grand Prismatic, loads of vendors that will help you get started in your garden this summer.
So what kind of seeds can gardeners find?
So we have people that, like I said, Grand Prismatic, they won't be there personally, but they will send some seeds. They are specifically for dye plants to dye your clothing or yarn. We have people that are really into herbs, like Mary Mylan, who I said earlier is a docent at the Ogden Botanical Gardens and runs the vegetable garden there. We have Shirley, who comes up from Salt Lake. She and Al, the punk rock gardener, do really hot peppers, different varieties of peppers from all over the world. They're really fun. Really just what our mission is to provide free education on seed saving, but also to increase the amount of varieties that we can grow and that we save the seeds from. It's really important that we don't all grow the same five varieties of corn, you know, that we try different varieties and get them adapted to our specific climate and zone.
For those who want to be adventurous, it sounds like a great place to get a lot of unique seeds.
We do have a man who comes. His name is Dale Thurber, and he comes from Price, and he has over probably 2,000 varieties of tomato seeds. And I went to the seed swap last year, and I said, Dale, do you have something that's similar to a Juliet, which is kind of like a smaller Roma type tomato that would be good for canning, because I'm really into preserving. And he shuffled through his tomatoes and he's like, here's this one. It's from, you know, it's from Russia. Try it out. Let's get it acclimated to our environment. You know, like just that type of obsession I love and passion for gardening, you will find at this Ogden Seed Exchange Seed Swap.
When does the event take place?
February 17th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And it's up here in Ogden at Ogden Preparatory Academy, 1415 Lincoln Avenue.
Does it cost anything to get in?
This seed swap is free. If you want, you can participate in the raffle. It's $1 a ticket, and that raffle price goes toward paying for the gym that we use for the event and any upcoming class supplies that we might need. You don't have to, but a lot of the raffle prizes are really fantastic. We get local businesses to donate, and they're just amazing raffle prizes. And what's different too about a seed swap versus ordering from a catalog is that all of these seeds are open pollinated and usually heirloom varieties. And they are usually between the price point of $1 to maybe $3 or $4. So it's the cost per package of seeds is a lot less.
Thank you very much. And I would really like to encourage gardeners to go.
We absolutely would love to have you to get excited for this upcoming gardening season. It's just such an important factor is getting seeds that are perfect for your climate and your zone.
Well, thank you very much.
What a fun interview. I didn't even know that that was a thing.
Yeah,
and what a
several,
fun time of year, February, yeah, when we can't do much. What a fun thing.
There are several seed exchanges across the Wasatch Front. And a lot of times it's a gardening club or, say, a master gardener group that get together. But this is the absolute biggest one. This is like the Home Depot, not to say that they're somehow industrial or anything mm-hmm. like that, but it is a huge seed exchange. And these are folks that oftentimes have been, like Bart, developing their own varieties or taking a variety and selecting the ones that survive the best and have the best fruit. And so they further refine the variety for Utah conditions. And there's a lot of them that just have this gentleman from Price that has over 2,000 varieties of tomatoes, you know, unique cucumbers. And so if you are into such things, it is very fun to go check out because you will never find these seeds anywhere else, or they can be very difficult. So even if you don't have any, you know, I will grow pretty run-of-the-mill varieties usually, you know, right? But, and so if you have just celebrity tomato seeds, I'm not sure if anybody's going to want them or not because they're very inexpensive and very available. But even if you don't have rare, unique things, bring your seeds and see, because somebody may want them. It's just a really fun event. And it's almost like if you've ever traded baseball cards, it's almost a very similar thing, but with seeds.
So when you say huge, like how many people do you think actually
show up? She said that over
up?
500 people attended last year.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Really.
Okay, I know that there are a lot of gardeners. I just didn't realize there were a lot of gardeners exchanging
this
seeds.
This is something, unfortunately, the show is on February 17th. And it's going to happen. It's too close to the greenhouse show. I wanted to see if I could make it up.
It'd be almost over.
But it is something that is just really worth going to. Now, before we go to break, I wanted to talk about how do you store seeds.
Why don't we do it after the break?
Okay, we'll do that.
Because we can take the full segment
we're getting
rather
close.
Than, just too close here. A number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us, 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Did want to actually complete our conversation, Ton, because I know there are folks who they're just out in their gardens all season long. Some of them save seeds of their favorite plants to regrow the next year, but a lot of people don't often think about really how to preserve seeds and maybe be part of a seed exchange.
Yeah, and so preserving seeds is very important because there are certain species like carrots, those seeds will only store for 1 year if they're not treated properly. And even other seeds like peas and things, you generally want to use within about 5 years, even though they will last longer. But the best way, there's degrees of storing seeds, I guess, depending on how serious you are, but minimally put all of your seeds in a cool area with low humidity so that the less water, those conditions just preserve the seeds. Cool and low humidity And so that's going to preserve them a little bit longer, but the best way to do it, if you're storing them long-term, is to actually put them in a glass jar of some sort with a sealable lid so that it doesn't let humidity in, and put those seeds in the bottom of your freezer. Because if the top of your, say you have it set to 0 degrees, the top of the freezer will be around zero, but the bottom of the freezer will be minus 10, minus 15, and seeds will last for between 10 and 20 years frozen like that and be fairly viable when you pull them out and use them.
Okay, that's something. I have saved seeds, mainly like zinnia seeds that I'm going to spread the next year, so I'm not doing a long-term preservation, but it's good to know how to do some of those things.
And so those, put in the basement in an unheated room,
right.
That's perfect.
Okay.
But say you wanted to save those. They were, you know, grandma's or your mom's that were in her yard, and just to protect a certain amount of them, if you took and got an envelope and put, you know, 3 or 4 ounces of them in there and put them in the freezer in case you had a crop failure or something, you would still have those seeds. But professionally or in research, there are seed banks around the world. There's one in the National Seed Bank for the United States is in Colorado. There's one that is like a doomsday seed bank in, I believe, Norway or Sweden in the Arctic, that hardly anybody can get into, but when they are protecting endangered species or sometimes extinct species, those seeds will be stored in such conditions so that they can be grown in the future.
So are seeds different than beans?
The bean is a fruit, and the seeds inside are what we eat. And so, like peas and beans are closely related. When you're eating snow peas, that's just the whole pod. It's an immature seed pod that is tender enough for us to eat. But if you allowed those to mature, they would just develop into a regular bean or pea pod, become unedible, but you would let those seeds dry. And as they start to dry down and they become crispy, you can collect them and then just store them for the next year.
Okay, but are they stored differently than your seeds?
No, they're not. They will last, because they're such sizable seeds, they'll last longer than many others. But if you're trying to protect them for a long period of time, they do need to be dry, but you just freeze them and they will be protected in that way. But there are examples of corn and beans and even certain species of palm where seeds have been hundreds of years old, but in areas where the air is really dry and they've been protected from animals and insects and things, we've germinated. There's a date palm, a type of date palm native to Israel that was extinct. It was known for its just delicious fruit, and for whatever reason, that type of date palm went extinct. And flowers or seeds were found. Is it Masada, the fort that was overrun by the Romans?
I don't know.
Anyway, I believe they found seeds at Masada, and they were planted. And there's researchers that are growing these Israeli date palms out, and they've restored this certain type of date palm that was extinct from the seeds. The seeds were hundreds of years old, but we have grown corn from areas where the Anasazi or the Puebloan people were, that we found grain stores of both beans and corn. And so you can go down to that area and purchase what are termed Anasazi beans. I know that's not the most correct term anymore, but they're a blue bean that's very delicious, making soups and things out of. And so there are many examples of germinating seeds hundreds and sometimes thousands of years old.
All right. Let's go back to our texters. This texter would like to know, does milkweed come back every year, and is there anything they should do to help them?
It is a perennial, but it doesn't live forever, but it does come back from seed. And so to protect them, if you harvest the seed, make sure it's mature and respread that seed, or just let it do its thing in Mother Nature. And if they're still on the plants, you know, late fall, early winter, just kind of break those seed pods and spread the seed around.
Jeff is asking, he's curious about when to trim a very established apricot tree, probably 20 years old, hasn't been trimmed back for many years.
Mid-March, don't take more than 25% of it out, and get on YouTube. USU has several pruning videos, but if you cut it way back, it'll just become angry and become worse than what it already is as far as being able to harvest and things.
Next listener says they're interested in growing ornamental corn this year. They like the ones that have the multicolor kernels. Is there any particular care that they need for those?
It's a type of field corn, and if they're growing seed corn or they're growing edible corn, you know, that they're going to like sweet corn, they don't want to be growing them adjacent because they will cross-pollinate and all their sweet corn will turn to field corn. So you can grow it, but if you're growing more than one kind of corn, get them as separate as you can.
Next listener says that we should do the greenhouse show from the seed swap on the 17th.
Well, logistically, I don't know if we could make that work this year, but that would be a fun one to do.
That's an awesome idea. That would be really fun. Okay, next person wants to know, should they put absorber packets in their seeds that they're going to save?
Oxygen packs, they don't hurt, too, and it will help preserve them, especially if you're freezing them. It doesn't hurt.
Okay, and then we have somebody who's sending pictures of their fiddle leaf, and you'll need to send those pictures. Unfortunately, these commercial text pages, we can't see pictures, so make sure you send those to us on Facebook and Messenger.
Yeah, we're not sitting here with a cell phone. It's a computer program that just only takes actual text and not images.
And it's annoying sometimes because if you send more than one text, I only see the last thing that you said, which so I'm probably missing a lot of what they said. Okay, number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls at 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Tony, do you want to go back quickly to that text about the fiddle leaf ficus? I think maybe you can answer the question without seeing the pictures. They are asking, why are the newest leaves spotted and more yellow than deep green on their fiddle leaf ficus? They water weekly at what, 16 ounces of tap water.
We're over here answering mm-hmm. garden questions blindfolded. You can't see if you have to explain
it,
it's not
funny.
I'm sorry.
Stop it.
That should be our new tagline. We answer your garden questions blindfolded. No. If you're having problems with a fiddle leaf fig, it's too close to a heat register, maybe eating too much water. So you've got this exact amount, but the best way to know when to water a houseplant is using your finger as your guide. You just stick your finger into the soil, and if it's on the drier side, a couple inches down, water. The soil will turn a lighter brown and start to draw away from the edges of the pot, and that's another good sign that you do need to water. But they also need to make sure that there's drainage holes in the pot. If it's sitting in standing water or it's a sealed pot and the water can't escape, the roots, even the top of the pot could be dry, but the roots at the bottom of the pot could be rotting.
Does it sound like it's getting overwatered?
It sounds like there may be watering issues or cold or heat issues.
Okay.
You know, sometimes you can get a fungal disease in them, and if you do, it's extremely difficult to get them out of the leaves, you know, using fungicides and things, and it's oftentimes just cheaper to buy a new one. Fiddle leaf fig is very common, and so if they wanted to send some pictures in to us on Facebook through Facebook Messenger or send pictures to their local extension office, but about 80% of the time during the winter, a houseplant is having problems. It's either too much water, too little water, heat or cold issues from drafty air, and sometimes too much fertilizer.
So pay attention to where it's sitting. Maybe
yes.
It's next to a furnace vent or something.
Yeah, make sure it's in bright filtered light off to the side of a south or west window. And just make sure that it dries out between irrigations and has drainage. And sometimes you can watch the new growth, and if the new growth comes out healthy, then even though the old leaves aren't cured, you've remedied the problem by watching new growth. But some pictures may be useful just to make sure it doesn't look like a fungus, but either our Facebook Messenger or the local extension office.
All right. Sherry is on the line in Harriman. Good morning, Sherry. What was your question?
Good morning. And first off, I want to thank you. You guys have given us so much valuable information in the past few years.
Well, thank you for listening.
Oh, we love it. We live on about an acre and have about a dozen fruit trees that are doing very well. Two of those are pear trees, about 20 years old. But I noticed this last year, they're sending out like half a dozen suckers from the bottom half of that trunk. And I'd love to cut those off if I'm not going to hurt the pear trees.
If you do not cut them off, it will reduce the vigor of the top of the tree because the root stock is in essence angry because it, when those trees, the way you get a fruit tree, the same fruit tree over and over and over is to take a, like an apple or a pear root stock and then whack the top off of it when it's, you know, under a year old. And then you graft a small branch from say a Golden Delicious apple or a Bartlett pear onto the rootstock. And so you have two different trees that you've in essence glued together that grow together. And sometimes the rootstock isn't completely compatible with that graft and it tries to send up its own suckers that are genetically the same as it. And so to, I'm not going to say prevent that, but to manage that, about once a month or every 6 weeks, you do need to go out and just trim those to the ground. And some of these pear trees can get an incredible number of suckers. And around the base, you can see the stubble from those being trimmed back. But that's the only way to manage it.
Okay, great. So I'm good.
You are.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Sherry, so much for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, can you freeze dry seeds?
I don't believe that's a good idea just because you completely desiccate the seed and they do need some moisture to survive, even though we dry them out. And so I've heard of people doing it and seeds germinating, but if I had a seed collection, I would not. I would just put them in the jars with the oxygen packs, put them in the freezer.
All right. Our next person would like to know what variety of pumpkins produce the holeless pepitas.
I would have to do more research. I'm such a culinary idiot that pepitas
okay. I'm gonna let
got
you look that one up. We'll
we
come back
need
to
a
that.
Chef for that one.
Alrighty.
Maybe.
Do North Pole arborvitae? Thanks so much.
Arborvitae?
Yeah, that. Do well in Utah. This person lives in Provo, a couple miles from the lake.
They will do fine. They are just a new cultivar of the standard arborvitae that we've been growing here for years and years. And one thing with arborvitae that especially the narrow forms are going to need to be wrapped with a burlap wrap or twine so that you can decane them so that the branches don't split out. And they're just a slightly narrower version of emerald green that we've been growing for years. The North Pole gets between 3 and 6 feet wide. And so it's maybe a third narrower than the regular arborvitae, but they're still going to need to be wrapped.
Okay. Next listener wants to know, when is the best time to trim? My brain and my mouth are not connecting this morning. When is the best time to trim grapes and how much should they trim them?
We're going to have Mike Caron on within the next couple months on grape trimming. Don't start trimming them until sometime in April. It's okay if they bleed. It doesn't hurt them at all. What happens and why certain maples, walnuts, grapes bleed when you prune them in late winter and spring is that the roots, the ground isn't frozen and the roots have a buildup of sugars, carbohydrates, and even some salts. And as the ground thaws out, water in the ground is less salty, less full of sugars than the water in the roots. And so it absorbs into the roots because nature tries to balance everything. And because you get positive pressure in the roots, that is, you have higher pressure in the roots than in the soil. When you start trimming, because you're making wounds on the tree, those wounds, the conductive tissue starts to bleed. It doesn't hurt anything. So grapes, the reason we've traditionally pruned them in January was to prevent that. But what we're finding is that we can still get a lot of winter damage through February on those grapes, especially when you prune them, because it reduces their hardiness. And so we have started pruning our grapes in April. And what we're finding is they will bleed a little bit. It doesn't harm them, but it's a lot easier to get them through a winter and to identify winter damage so you can adjust your pruning accordingly. I'm not going to try to explain how to prune grapes. It's like trying to explain how to ride a bicycle on the air. Mm-hmm. It's just something you have to get experience doing. There are a lot of YouTube videos. Michael Caron sometimes teaches grape pruning at Thanksgiving Point. We have others that do it, and I would watch some videos on how to do it.
Sarah, thanks so much for your text this morning. Ed would like to know, Ed has two Asian pear trees that were severely affected by the fireplace?
Fire blight, probably. I think spell check got them.
I hate spell check. This summer, will those trees survive to, again, this summer?
If the fire blight wasn't cut out, that fire blight will continue to spread and kill the tree eventually. Depending on the tree and the rootstock, it can kill over a period of several years or one season. In pears, it's a lot worse than apples. The pears are a lot more susceptible. Mm-hmm. And so if there was fire blight in that tree, they need to prune it out about a foot beyond where they see damage if they can. And they sterilize the pruners with Clorox or Clorox wipe or something after every cut.
Why does autocorrect change fire blight to fireplace?
Because the fireplace is probably using some sort of AI, and fireplace is a lot more common term. Fire blight is two words. And so if you put it together, Google, I know Android changes it to fireplace instead of blight.
Rude. Next listener says their apple tree was inundated with the woolly apple aphid by the end of the season last year. What should they do this spring to get rid of that disease?
Get some water and Murphy's oil soap and just mix it up and get a sponge and wash it off the tree. There you do have populations in the roots. And so if you start seeing populations reappear in the spring, go back out and wash it off with the Murphy's oil soap and water. Or if you can't get rid of it, a systemic containing imidacloprid or Merit is the same thing. I don't like using those, but sometimes you need to. And so when the tree is done blooming, you can apply a systemic and that will knock the woolly apple aphid out.
Okay. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Text us at 57500. Good morning. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos, Tom Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open. You can text us at 57500. Our next texter is asking, why are we told not to plant arborvitae in Utah? Do the deer eat them?
Oh, they're deer candy. And so if you have deer problems, they'll be eaten up to about the 6 or 7 foot level. Mm-hmm. Unless you can somehow keep the deer away from them. So it's not that we're told not to plant them, but if you have deer problems, they are deer candy. So I would just, you know, be cautious, but they're all over the place. And where you see them struggle is where they're sitting in really clay soils that don't drain very well.
So they just don't do as well here. That's why people are
told. Well, they do fine.
Well, then I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know where they've heard that. Sometimes you get a horticulturist or a landscaper that's had bad luck with something and it's like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't plant them.
Those.
But home after home has arborvitae and they do wonderfully. It's just that over time, especially the older varieties like Emerald Green, will eventually get 10 feet wide and 20 or 30 feet tall, and they can develop multiple trunks. And so if they're not regularly trimmed, and you know you need to know how to trim them, they can get a little forlorn looking, I guess, but they do wonderfully here. They're actually very adapted, even up into the Cache Valley and Heber and there are mountain valleys. It's just that they are deer candy and they do not tolerate being overwatered and being in soils that don't drain very well.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, we've been talking in the last few weeks about different things people should be planting, buying seeds, those kinds of things. We mentioned earlier that it's past time to do your onion seeds. So if you're going to be doing onions, you should do those. Are there some other things that this week or coming up in the next week or so that people should think about if they want to get going as far as seeds?
You know, the nurseries are just, and garden centers are just getting their seed displays going, but keep an eye on it because the best selection is when those things are first installed. And sometimes they don't get any more in of certain varieties. And so even if you are just planting Early Girl and Celebrity Plus and the common tomatoes and peppers, by early April, they're gone, or even March. And so you need to get in and get the seeds you want soon, because they do disappear. And some years we have some shortages of them. Some other things, petunias take a long time. And I don't know why on earth anybody would grow their own petunias indoors. It is a long,
drawn out.
Oh, my
neighbor plants wave petunias.
Yeah.
And she used to plant them before they were popular, right?
If you know what you're doing, it's not hard. It's just that they have to be planted in mid to late January to have them ready by May. And the seed is so small, it's almost like dust. And so you can get what are called encapsulated seed, and they're much easier. And you can pay up to 50 cents a seed, but if you're only growing 20 or 30 of them, it's doable. Mm-hmm. And these encapsulated seeds, they have a coating that makes it so much easier. But petunias take a long time. We're coming upon the time pretty soon to start getting cool season vegetables. If you're going to start them indoors, they're going to need to be started soon also.
Okay, I have to ask. I saw a post on one of the gardening sites this week. Somebody said, hey, the seeds are in at all a dollar. And it made me question, are all seed packets made equal?
Well, you need to look at the...
Right? I'm just wondering,
germination
why are there
a
dollar
tests,
and everybody else's are like three?
Because legally, those seeds are supposed to be tested annually. And you can sell older seed if the germination rates are up to par, and that has to be posted. But a lot of times dollar stores are dumping grounds for seeds and other things that may not have been tested. And so I'm sure that the seeds are just from last year and they're fine.
So they should check the date.
They need to check the date.
There's a stamped date.
Yes. And unless it's carrot or parsnip or, you know, other seeds that are very small, they're probably just fine. I noticed Macy's had brand new seed displays and all the seeds were 50% off in Macy's. And it might be something that they have maybe not quite gone a year by being tested, and so they can still be sold. But if you can find good seed varieties and the seeds are 50% off, even if they're last year's stock, buy them.
Yeah, I'm just like, are these seeds made equal? I mean, are they going to produce?
Yes, they will.
Okay.
They will. And it's just make sure they're not 3 or 4 years old.
All right. I want to remind those folks who maybe haven't been listening the last couple of weeks what some of your favorite seed catalogs are.
Oh, man. Don't get me started. Sheridan's coming in a few weeks, mm-hmm. and she'll have a completely different list than me. But for what I order, and I'm all about productivity. And so Johnny's Seed, Park Seed, Gurney, Burpee, Baker Creek is another one that Sheridan likes that I have ordered from also. Every once in a while, Amazon. I get really leery sometimes. I try to at least get the 4-star rated people, but every once in a while you can find strange things on Amazon, like strange varieties of peanuts and things. And so those are my 5 main ones that I order from, but there are many others out there.
Are there some that you've been seeing on social that you would be leery of, or when should people be leery of some of the things they see on social media?
I am leery if they don't list a real species, like a Latin name, or if it's a tomato, you don't need it. But there are some disreputable companies that will rename things. In the 90s, there was a company selling Royal Austria, AUS, like it was some exotic tree that they didn't say it outright, but like, we imported this and it's going to grow 10 feet a year. It was just a hybrid poplar or willow that was developed for paper pulp production. There's plantations up in the Pacific Northwest that's what they do, is they cut these trees for newsprint and for like paper bags and things, really low quality paper fiber that you don't need to last long. It was just one of those. It was a hybrid willow, and it was going to cause a lot of problems in the yards because they're disease prone and surface rooted. They're messy trees. And so when I don't see what the tree really is, if it says something like Royal Oss tree, you know that they're trying to trick you.
So be aware of the really unique things. Do a little bit of research on
those.
Yes,
find out what they are. The internet's a big place. And if there's some strange plant, you can do an internet search and find out all about it.
All right. We have about a minute left. Next listener wants to know, how does Vanderwolf do in Utah?
It is a little hard to get established. It was one of the trees when I was working in the nursery industries that was returned more than other trees. And it is one that if you plant it, it needs well-drained soil. And it needs to make sure, you need to make sure that it's not drowned to death, but it doesn't dry out. Once it's established, it does fine. But we had a lot more Vanderwolf pines returned than other pine species.
Okay, we have three texters saying, chiming in about the dollar store seeds, saying make sure you check the quantity of the package.
Yes.
Because they say they got 14 compared to the brand that had 40. So,
yeah, so
that's
check
the
that
biggest
too.
Thing they've noticed in those packets, that they have a lot fewer seeds. So thank you so much for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. We'll be right back.